Today is the 24th of July 2013, and I'm here to interview Sonia Hancocks. Sonia, could you tell me first when and where you were born and what was your name at birth? When were you born and what was your name at birth?
Sonia Regina.
Now my name is Sonia Regina Hancocks. Birth? At birth?
Sonia Regina Goldman.
Yes, I suppose so.
And what year were you born?
1925, 12th of November.
Could you tell us a little of what you remember of your early years? Where were you? Where were you living?
Not very beautiful surroundings. My mother married somebody in Czechoslovakia whom she met, and they fell in love, and I was conceived at least there. They soon found out they were most unsuitable. They went to Germany and wanted a divorce, but the German government wouldn't give them a divorce. By German law, they weren't married. So by German law, they had to get married again before they could get a divorce.
Oh.
So I'm telling you that this is not a sort of clean living.
Not a simple story.
No. Now, my father had a cigar works in Westphalia and cigarettes and tobacco and so forth. And he sent to my mother in Berlin to sell because she didn't want to go back to the country. She wanted to stay in Berlin, where she had been a nurse in her uncle's hospital. So I was born somewhere not very beautiful in Berlin among tobacco, etc. So I remember nothing at all about this, but I know that they got divorced because I've got their divorce papers. And my mother went into business in a bigger way and even set up my father, because he wasn't very business-like.
Even after he was divorced from her?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, they had a child.
Of course.
They might not have liked each other, but they both fought over me. What else can I tell you about that time? I used to visit him, go away with him at the weekend, and my mother worked very hard. That's full stop at the moment. I don't know where you want to go.
Were her parents still alive? Were they in Berlin as well?
Her parents?
Yes.
No, my grandfather was alive, and my grandmother died, and he married again. She was the second wife.
So in the 1930s, you were living with your mother in Berlin?
In the 1930s, I was at boarding school.
Oh, I see.
At just outside Berlin. Can't think of the name of the...
It doesn't matter. And when did you... Because you must have been aware you were about 10
oh,
when
sure.
the Nazis came to power.
Did oh, yes.
Did it affect you? Did you notice
changes? Oh, yes. Indeed, we
in
noticed.
Way?
Well, first of all, my mother and I were on a rowing boat, and we heard the announcement that Hitler was now our leader and that we should all be very pleased about that.
And was your mother aware that things were going to be difficult?
My mother was politically active in Berlin. She was, I don't know quite, but she certainly didn't welcome Hitler in. And one of her cousins, who I was named after, was a friend of who was a political leader in the late 20s. Yes, and my mother was neither religious nor politically correct nor anything else. She was a sort of merry widow, and they had what would have been called the salon with her cousin. And they had a very good time. They knew all the actors and writers in Berlin. And life for her was very good.
What was she doing?
She had started a dry cleaning. And aren't you allowed your elbows up there? dry cleaning, remaking old clothes, because the people were quite poor. But in the 30s, they got richer. And she was making quite a lot of money. And this, by this time, she had three shops. And things looked up for her. And their lifestyle was very nice. Something that happened that I found most, most interesting was that all the people who had been the pucker lawyers, teachers, professors and everything else lost their jobs immediately. And lost their income immediately.
Back in Germany.
Yes. So on Saturday and Sunday, we used to have open house, and they all came in either with their shoe cleaning stuff, or their cookery, or they did my mother's hair, or feet, or something or other. And it was a totally open day, and they exchanged things. And they sold things, and my mother bought what she could, because she had money, you see. This was still in Berlin.
But her business, I assume that her business was taken over by the Nazis in the end.
Yes, but none of this was terribly obvious. You know, the shops were open. You see, when you have a dry cleaning and remaking thing, it goes on. And people were asked not to go into the shops. But they got coats and hats and everything in there. So I have no idea of how it just went on.
So she must have managed...
Yeah, she had managers in the shops.
That's prior to 39.
And that was quite a fascinating bit, that they all came to the house.
And you said Mutti used to feed them.
Oh, yes. I mean, there was food all day and all night.
It's very interesting. And she must have been quite unusual that she was still making money when they had lost their
and you see, she earned money while they earned nothing. And it was unusual, very unusual.
But then everything, I assume, changed once Hitler did become Chancellor.
No, she had been married to a Pole, and that... She always had a Polish flag in the back of her car and a Jewish car number on the back of the car, you see.
Were there Jewish car numbers?
Oh, yes. Everything over 350, I think, and then the number on was a Jewish car number. But she also had a Polish flag in her car.
And was quite provocative then.
Yes, she was very provocative. And she got into trouble with the police quite often. And the one time when she really fell out with me, the police had picked her up in the night and I never woke up. And she thought that was really not the thing to do. Anyway, we got along very well. And... I got into the theatre and in the cinema late at night. You know, sort of, she took me along everywhere. And we enjoyed life. And she didn't want to leave Germany because she thought somebody would kill him. Wow. But nobody did, you know.
So what happened? What forced you out of Germany and when did
you leave? Well, our passports were coming to an end. I think it was end of June 1939, our Polish passports came up. And just before then was Kristallnacht. And they made rather a mess of the synagogues. And they picked up my father and put him on a train. And they put them between two stations, one German station and one Polish station. and left the train there. And if you had money, you could make your own decisions. And if you had none, heaven help you.
And was he able to escape? Was he left in no man's land? Or
he was left in no man's land, but he was quite an attractive looking man. And he had met some woman who worked for the Thai embassy. And she got him a passport or a visa or something. And he was allowed back to Berlin for 2 days, or 1 day, 2 days, but no longer. And he chartered a plane. I've got a photograph of it. He chartered a plane and took her, this woman, I don't know whether she was Jewish or what she was, to take her, her mother, her son, and somebody else, and they all flew off to Thailand. I don't know where they changed. Petrol, whatever, I have no idea. I saw them off, and it was a tiny little plane with about 4 seats in or something. And it took all his money, you know, especially when everybody wanted to grab a bit of it. But they flew off, and I went to the aerodrome and saw them off. My mother didn't go.
What were you on your birth certificate? Polish? Or?
I was Polish. I was never German. I was Polish till the last day there. But it was going to be all gone. We'd made good use of it, but it was no use after that.
Sorry, what was no use?
My Polish passport.
Oh, your passport. So how did you get out? What happened?
Now, let me see. Eat some raspberries. Go on.
Thank you.
If we're not allowed tea yet, we must have raspberries. Now, I'll tell you, we had to leave by the day the passport was up. And we arrived in our car with our Polish flag in the back at Hamburg to get on a boat. And unfortunately, my mother, who was a bit skittish about facts, had packed her passport and her travel documents in one of these big trunks, you know. Mm-hmm. And we had the most delightful captain on this boat, a little, not a very big one, from Hamburg to London. And he let us just tip him up on deck. And he said he would take us to Hull, where he was going. But if we couldn't find them, he'd have to bring us back to Germany. So we made good use of the time to look for the passport. And of course, they were wrapped with the writing paper and so forth.
That must have been terrifying.
Oh, I mean, I was terrified of my mother and for my mother, because I felt so responsible for her. She was a delightful woman, and everybody loved her, but she was totally irresponsible. Did you have a good mother?
Yes, she was very responsible. But luckily, we were never tested, as you were. Did your mother know where she was going in London? Once she arrived, did you have something to
Yes,
know?
We did know. It started... She was in a private school in Germany, and there was an English woman, I can't remember her name, and she worked for some refugee organization. And have a raspberry.
Thank you.
And she said she would find my mother a job. And my mother found a job in a big house, enormous house, in behind the kitchen door, you know.
As a maid.
And so we arrived, we went to London first, where we had rich relations, but they only took us to see the sights. You know how it was like.
Yes, I think that was common.
Yeah, we saw the Bank of England and everything else. Anyway, we arrived in this big place, and they weren't at all pleased with us. when they found out I had to go to school, that I wasn't old enough, they wanted us out as soon as possible. So I went into an orphanage, and my mother went in to cook for somebody else. But jobs were 10 a penny. You know, I mean, if you could cook. And my mother had done, before we came away, she'd done two courses. One was a mega cookery course, because she never cooks at home, you know. But she did this mega cookery course, and then she did one on makeup and shoe polish and other things.
To have a skill to sell.
To have skills, mm-hmm. because, you know, to have any skill was better than nothing.
You must have been by that time, what, about 14?
Yes.
And
no, 13, just coming up 14.
14. So you would have had to go to school.
The school was a sort of intermediate thing. The teachers were absent more than the children. They came out of camps, and they had really a rather harder time than we had.
It must have been a terrible shock for her to end up here in Britain as a cook.
No.
No, she
no.
coped with that well, did she?
Oh, she coped with that very well. We were on the way to America, you see. We got visas for America, and we were only having a stop-off year.
Is that right?
Yes.
So what made her stay?
The boat was sunk.
Oh.
That was a good enough reason.
A very good reason.
So we never went to America. I've still got the visas.
Have you?
Oh, yes. And it never worried her. She thought everything would be all right.
And then you, after you left school, what happened to you?
Oh, I got lots of apprenticeships.
Did you?
Oh, yes. I wanted to go to university, but I didn't. Thank goodness. It wouldn't have fitted in with the lifestyle.
Is that right? Were you a bit like your mother then?
Yes.
Let's see. And tell me then, when you were working here, you must have picked up English quite quickly.
Oh, I went to school first, but that didn't last. The teachers were constantly changing, you know.
During wartime, I'm sure
there
was a lot of change. And so what, after all these apprenticeships, what job did you end up doing?
I became a milliner.
Oh.
Because that was part of my mother's, what she did in the shops.
Right. And yet you ended up here in Scotland. How was that? Because you were down in the south of England.
I don't know.
You do. You met Dad.
Oh yes, I met my husband in Birmingham. And though I didn't want to get married, I did. Yes, he was a civil servant.
An engineer.
Engineer. And he was moved up to Scotland, and so I came along.
And
they wanted a married couple.
I see. And what was your first impression of Scotland and the people?
I had been to Scotland before. I had come up for the Edinburgh Festival and enjoyed it thoroughly, and I thought it would all be like the Edinburgh Festival.
Right, so you were disappointed then?
Yeah, yes, yes.
Okay, so tell me more about Scotland. When you came here, did you meet or mix with any of the other refugees? Or
oh, immediately.
How did you do that?
In Birmingham, before we came up, we met a journalist. And he was coming back the next day, so he arranged to meet my husband, and he arranged to... Did you know Izzy Metchstein?
Oh, yes.
He brought him along, and he had two brothers and two sisters, and we knew half of Glasgow by that time. You know, and he brought other people. So we knew a lot of people.
Did you tend to mix with other people who had come escaping Nazi Germany or local people?
Both. both, because some of the German people went to school with others whom they brought. No, I mixed with a mixture.
Yes. With a mixture of people
here. Yeah.
And did you find Scotland a welcoming place?
Oh, definitely, because we'd already got so many friends.
Well, that's very nice. Were you involved in any sort of voluntary work here, or were you working always as a milliner when you were here?
I did miserable Oxfam work and...
No, that was laterally. When you first arrived, you didn't work.
No, not when I first arrived.
You had a family?
Oh, yes.
How many children did you have?
Well, by the time we came to Scotland, I had 3 children and 2 stepdaughters.
That's a significant number.
Yes.
Eventually, you had 3 children.
But we came to Scotland.
No, I was born in Scotland. Andy was born in Scotland. When you arrived in Scotland, you had no children apart from 2 stepdaughters. It doesn't matter. But, I mean, yes. Just for...
Okay, I was...
They've probably been in your mind the whole time.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Weighing heavily.
Oh, yes.
I'm sure that's the case. Is your Judaism significant in your life, the fact you came from a Jewish background?
Yes and no. Yes, because whatever we argued about, it was nothing you could ever forget or put aside. About religious, I've never been. Is that right?
I'm not quite sure what you're saying, actually.
You mean whatever you argued about back in Germany?
And who are you talking about arguing with? Are you talking about...
With anybody.
No, but you didn't. Religion never played a part. I mean, I've never been to a synagogue with you.
But I suppose the reason I had to leave...
I've never, you know, and that is quite a sort of good reason for not getting involved in religion when this is what, you know, but you've never been religious.
No, I've never been religious, but on the other hand, I would never have...
Denied?
No, never. No, it's a difference of approach. I don't know how you feel. You feel very religious.
No. In your time here in Scotland, what would you say were the high points for you?
Probably acceptance. Nobody ever asked me. They thought I was just foreign, you know. But I could have been Italian or Spanish or...
That makes sense.
Or whatever. Is that right?
Well, when you're being asked about high points, what significant events, anything?
I don't know.
I mean, you were born... You used to have good fun.
Yes, and we knew a wide selection of intelligent people, you know, sort of, that we dealt with. It's difficult to...
We used to have things like a bonfire party every year.
Yes, every year. And every year the same people came.
But it was good fun, you know.
Yes. And they were all sort of intellectually there.
Well, that's...
Now, the West End of Glasgow was a good place.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That we never came across you. It was... Sort of.
I was in the West End.
You went in the West End.
I was, oh yes.
Well, Mum didn't live in the West. They lived in Cartacarn for a while, and also
we lived
in Helensburgh.
Oh yes.
Yeah, and then we came back to Glasgow. It just didn't suit anymore when everybody left to go to university and so forth. Mm. It didn't suit anymore to live in the sticks.
When did you come to this house?
Oh, about 50 years ago.
And do you feel Scottish now, or...?
Am I Scottish now?
Are you Scottish
now?
No. What are you, would you say?
No, I couldn't tell you what I am. But certainly I'm not Scottish. And I'm not in favour of what they're going to do in Scotland. But I'm on my own in this opinion.
Well, I don't think you're on your own in this opinion, but you're probably on your own in your unique number of nationalities. So you must be
partly
Czech, partly German, partly Polish.
Yeah.
It's quite a big mixture.
Yes. Are you in favour of Scotland becoming Scotland?
Certainly not.
Oh, good.
Not.
Thank you.
You can come back again.
Certainly not. I think maybe I'll ask you one more question, if I may. What would you say were the low points? I asked you about high points in your life. What would you say were low points? Or fortunately, have you avoided them after 1939?
Bad things that happened or difficult
times? No. I really can't think of any low point.
Oh, that's excellent.
Being on that boat, looking for that passport, that must have been a low point.
But no, I can't think of any terribly high points or terribly low points. The high points are easier to find, but the low points, I just can't think of any.
I mean, you
quarrel with your family, but
that's normal.
Yes. Let's eat these.
Thank you.
Then
very
we might be able to get a cup of tea.
Yes, I think we're in time for a cup of tea. So thank you very much for speaking to us.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And Marion, you're Sonia's daughter. Would you like to add anything?
Well, one thing Mum didn't mention was when my grandfather flew off in this jet with the woman from the Thai embassy. Somehow or another, they ended up in Shanghai. And they spent the war in Shanghai and came back.
Came back.
Oh, yes.
To us.
By this time, with a half-brother.
Oh, yes. He had a German half-brother, not a Thai half-brother.
No. The woman from the Thai embassy. Yes, he had married this woman, and you had a half-brother, Robert.
Yes.
Who came and lived with us in Newcastle for a while.
Yeah.
And then he ended up emigrating to
America.
Yes. Was it New York?
Can't remember.
Okay. But
my father stayed with us and went back to Germany. He couldn't stand family life, but is that right?
Yeah, I can't think what else you may... that was just one point, because it was just the fact that my grandfather ended up in Shanghai, and I've always wanted to go and see Shanghai just because of, you know...
Oh, well, you probably will.
I might. But we went back to Bunda, which is north of...
Where my mother came from.
Yes. And it's where your mother had been a nurse for your grandfather's...
No.
No?
Never.
No, where did she work as a nurse? Because
grandfather's half-brother had a sanatorium in Berlin, a great big place where soldiers went to get better.
From the First World War?
Yes. And she had no training, but the head of this place was my aunt, and took her in, especially as she wanted to get away from the country.
And that's why she ended up in Berlin.
Yeah. And then she didn't want to go back again.
And didn't you tell me all those years ago when I visited with my father that your mother kept a special kind of diary showing all the people who visited the house?
I've got it here. Marion will show you in a minute.
And they wrote little comments to you?
Oh, yes. Germans are very keen on little comments. Have you got a book like that?
No.
We actually offered it to the Berlin Museum. But the fellow wasn't keen enough. You know, he was keen at first, and then when you tried to contact him, you couldn't contact him. So I've got the book.
I'd like to see it after that.
Oh, yes.
But the other thing was that we went to Bunda.
Yes.
And to see what the place looked like.
Yes.
What relation was it to your grandparents?
Yes.
All right. And we went and found your grandparents' family house.
Oh, yes. No difficulty at all.
And we couldn't find the cigar factory.
Well, it's been knocked down.
Yes, but we found another cigar factory still in the area.
It's a centre of tobacco. How the middle of Germany became the centre of tobacco, don't ask me.
But we went and knocked on the door of this factory.
Yes, and they were very nice.
And they were charming.
Yes.
And took us in and talked to us and all sorts.
Oh, yes. Highly polished everything.
Yes.
You know, and my grandfather's workshops had been used for the museum. There's a tobacco museum in Bünde, and that is largely my grandfather's workshops.
How interesting.
And the other thing is, on the streets, they've got a project.
Oh, yes.
And Stein, what are they called? Yes. The stones?
Yes, they build in...
To the pavements.
Yes, but what are they? What stones?
They're memorials to people who died from Bünde.
Yeah.
I've actually got a couple of photographs of those, and one of them is for your grandfather.
Yes.
And also for his second wife.
And did they perish in the camps then?
Say that again.
Did they perish in the camps?
No. My grandfather, my mother had taken something up from the hospital.
Some tablets.
And when we came away, we came to Britain. And we'd said goodbye to them. And on a certain date, I've got it in the book, he was called to the police station. And they were going to ship him off to wherever. But he'd got this thing in his pocket. So he died in the police station.
But your grandmother, she didn't, and she ended up in Theresienstadt.
Yes, yes.
And she perished.
Well, she, in the meantime, they had got a lot of old ladies staying there, and she really couldn't just abandon them, you know, so she went back home, and she ended up in a camp.
Hello?
With the other ladies, and you hear the date, and you see the 1942, they were all sent to the camp. But he was 80, whatever, and he thought he'd take the easy way out.
Yes, and as did many others.
Yes, yes. So he was very lucky. He'd had a charmed life. Like my mother.
Okay, thank you, Sonia. That was great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.